for Earth for what it's worth. Cause this is the only Earth we got. Shut them down. Shut them down. That's the only way to keep them down.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Dr. Helen Caldicott, who's a physician, author, and anti-nuclear advocate who has founded several organizations, including Physicians for Social Responsibility, dedicated to opposing the use of nuclear power, depleted uranium munitions, nuclear weapons proliferation, and war. She was personally nominated for a Nobel Peace Prize by Nobel laureate Linus Pauling. Additionally, the Smithsonian Institute has named Dr. Caldicott as one of the most influential women of the 20th century. She has organized a major international symposium in New York on the second anniversary of Fukushima next week with leading researchers and experts. Her event, Fukushima 2 years Later, a global symposium to address mounting medical and ecological consequences, will take place on March the 11th and 12th at the New York Academy of Medicine. It is a project of the Helen Caldicott Foundation, and the symposium is co-sponsored by Physicians for Social Responsibility. Welcome to Background Briefing, Helen Caldicott.
Thank you, Ian.
And you would have thought that 2 years after Fukushima that nuclear power would have been put to rest. But now we have, of course, a new Secretary of the Energy, yet another nuclear physicist following the previous Secretary of Energy. And it seems to me that the nail is not in the nuclear coffin, surprisingly or not.
Yeah, I'm very disappointed in Obama. I had such high hopes for him. He seems to be an intelligent man. But he's totally closed about nuclear power. Mind you, he took $250,000 from Exelon for his first election and probably as much for his second. And Exelon, I think, runs about 11 reactors all around Chicago. And John Rowe, who was the president of Exelon, was one of his main advisors, although John Rowe has just retired and said he doesn't think nuclear power is the answer for the future, which is interesting. But, you know, I wish I could have just half an hour with Obama in the Oval Office by myself as a physician, a pediatrician, to talk to him about his children and the dangers from nuclear power. And I'm sure I could turn him around, but you know, you can't get to the man.
Well, apparently they're going ahead now with loan guarantees for this nuclear power plant in Georgia that is subject to global warming, meaning that the river that it's on might well disappear one day and then you'll have a meltdown. So that's the part of it that I find extraordinary. It seems to be inexorable. It seems to have a life of its own, even though what happened to Fukushima, that's going to take 40 years just to demolish that plant. 40 years.
Oh, well, I don't think they ever will, Ian. I mean, never before have they had to deal with three total meltdowns. They never got to the molten fuel at Chernobyl. It just disappeared into the earth. They can't remove it. It's too radiologically hot to get anywhere near it. There was a partial meltdown at Three Mile Island. They did apparently unearth that fuel and send it off God knows where, probably to Hanford. But they'll never get it out in Japan. They don't even know where it is, and it's so stinking hot radiologically, no one can get near it. They made a special robot to send in there some months ago, and the thing disappeared. They didn't hear from it again. It went into the nasty parts, and it must have totally broken down under the radiation. I don't think they'll ever decommission it.
Well, number three reactor apparently is so hot that the levels reach 1,710 microsieverts per hour, which compared to a chest X-ray of 50 microsieverts, you get an idea of how hazardous it is for human health, even getting next to reactor three. And of course, there are four reactors altogether involved in the decommissioning. Tell me about what you've been doing.
Okay. Well, first of all, it's going to be opened by the ex-Japanese Prime Minister Naoto Kan, who was in charge of the whole catastrophe at the time. And it was he who really saved Japan. He's got a bum rap now from people because the nuclear industry attacked him because he became very anti-nuclear. And the American nuclear industry, along with the Japanese nuclear industry, attacked him. But what he did was, during the accident, when no one knew what was happening and the anxiety was huge, TEPCO was about to evacuate all the workers from the Fukushima reactors. Now, had that happened, the thing would have gone absolutely out of control. There would have been no cooling water. There would have been explosions and huge releases of radiation. Fukushima Daiichi just a few miles away would have gone too. And what he did was rush to the reactors and say to TEPCO, you are not to evacuate the workers. They've got to stay. And I spoke to a man who I can't name, who I wanted to speak at the symposium, and he said he couldn't. He was put in charge by Naoto Kan in the first few days of evacuating 50 million people. That was his mandate. So you can see how incredibly severe the whole thing was. And so I've got Naoto Kan talking about what it was like to be Prime Minister at the time. Then a wonderful guy who's a nuclear engineer in Japan who's been anti-nuclear forever, and he's now become a hero of the younger people in Japan. Then I've got lovely Arne Gunderson, who's a nuclear engineer, talking about how it happened, how much radiation got out. David Lockbaum, nuclear engineer from Union of Concerned Scientists, talking about the same thing. And then we get into the medical and ecological stuff. I've got a wonderful man from Poland, an endocrinologist, a pediatrician who deals with childhood thyroid diseases, who will be commenting via video from Poland, and I met him in Poland recently, about the fact that there are over 100,000 children in Fukushima who have been examined by ultrasound to their thyroids, and over 40% of them have thyroid cysts, little holes containing fluid in their thyroids and or nodules, solid tumours. This is unique in the history of pediatrics. I mean, I've never seen a child with a thyroid nodule in my, you know, years of practicing pediatrics. Now, of those, three have been diagnosed with cancer and seven more are suspected. Now, this is really scary because thyroid cancer didn't start appearing in Chernobyl until 5 years later. I think there were a total of 5,000 or 6,000 who developed it, or maybe more. So this is really early. It's only 2 years post-accident, and it indicates several things. One, that these children must have inhaled and ingested a very large amount of radioactive iodine and cesium, which also concentrates in the thyroid, which we've just found out. So they obviously got a really high dose of radiation, so you extrapolate to that to other organs, and all cancers can be caused by radiation, all cancers. And the isotopes that were released during the accident, several hundred, some of which decayed away in seconds and some last millions of years, were all over the place, and people were enveloped in them in clouds of radioactive elements, and they landed on the soil, and when they're on the soil, they get what's called ground shine, gamma radiation being emitted like X-rays continuously from the ground. And when they're enveloped in radioactive, you know, clouds, they're also being irradiated from gamma radiation, but also they're inhaling radioactive isotopes that go to various organs in the body and stay there for months or years, radiating small volumes of cells, which get a very high dose. So things look grim. The Japanese government, meanwhile, is working vociferously to cover up this data. They're not really following up the children with these thyroid lesions. They may get an ultrasound 2 years later, during which time they may have developed cancer.
But at least, just to give some scope to this, they're admitting to a cleanup cost of at least $100 billion.
You can't clean it up, Ian.
What you're telling us about, they're not even dealing with.
No, but you can't clean it up. I mean, what do you do? Children are playing in kindergartens on very radioactive soil, so they get a bulldozer and sweep the soil aside. Where do they put it? They're putting it in plastic bags. Where are they going to put the... And the soil will remain radioactive for hundreds of years. Where are they going to put the soil? They're tipping that the people who are doing the cleanup, so-called cleanup, it's been delegated to various corporations who work for and in the nuclear industry, and they're dumping it. Some of the workers are dumping it in rivers and stuff. The trees, the leaves are radioactive. They come down in the fall. The ground is so radioactive, the trees re-suck up more radiation. So the next lot of leaves are radioactive. And so it goes on for hundreds of years. The food, much of it in Fukushima is radioactive. The government is purposefully saying that children should eat food grown in Fukushima because that's good for the farmers because they need to get back on their feet. It's quite extraordinary. And then I read a piece that they're exporting the very radioactive food to developing countries that's being canned and sent off to developing countries.
So tell us about then, Helen Caldicott, the symposium that you're organising, Fukushima 2 years later, Global Symposium Addressing the Mounting Medical and Ecological Consequences. Clearly, as we mentioned in the beginning, it's extraordinary to think that after that disaster, which is still ongoing, and the cleanup, it's going to take at least 40 years, and $100 billion is what they've talked about so far. And as you've made it clear, ultimately, it can't really be cleaned up. And the people that are still there, either living there or growing food there, are both posing a risk of their own health and the health of others by exporting this food, as you mentioned, being sent off to the third world. What is the American component here, though, in as much as we have just south of us here in Los Angeles, down near San Diego, a nuclear power plant right on the ocean, just like the Fukushima were, with a very small berm, again, with diesel generators, the backup generators that could be easily swamped by seawater. But that aside, just repairing and upgrading this nuclear power plant, they succeeded in screwing it up so badly that they've had to close it down.
Yeah.
I mean, and this is a self-inflicted wound, yeah, let alone an act of nature. So, again, I'm just mystified as to how this incredibly dangerous technology continues to pose a risk to us all when it's demonstrated that we simply, as a species, are incapable of controlling this.
Well, the nuclear power has inordinate influence, Ian. And so they fund the campaigns of the politicians who get into power. So all the politicians virtually are corporate prostitutes, and they don't represent the people at all, although they're voted in by the people. They represent the corporations who give them the money to advertise on television in order for the people to vote for them. And then they're reliant upon, you know, looking after their corporate sponsors and not the people at all. A, B, the politicians are mostly scientifically and medically illiterate, so they don't know what they're doing. And so they just respond to their corporate sponsors and their desires. And so the people are not being represented. The doctors are not stepping out of their consulting rooms or hospitals to educate the people through the media about what's happening, like we did with the nuclear weapons freeze campaign in the 80s. We're not doing that now. And it's really in our hands because this is a medical problem, you know. It took us, I don't know, 40 years to convince people to stop smoking, and it's really working in Australia now. We have plain cigarette packets with pictures of people dying of cancer on them, and that's become a first, and it's really turning off people from smoking, and a box of 20 cigarettes costs $20 now almost. So it takes a long time, and the way you practice preventive medicine is through the political process. How did we eliminate smallpox? We taught the politicians that if you immunize people against smallpox, that the disease will be prevented. And now it's gone from the face of the planet. Same with polio. We're working on that, you know, immunizing people. So global preventive medicine is practiced through the political process. And unfortunately, our colleagues, my colleagues, are not active enough in this area. We're not taught about the nuclear fuel cycle in medical school, but I must say that the best audiences I ever address are doctors. I mean, I hardly have to say anything, and they understand genetic mutations, genetic disease, carcinogenesis, mutagenesis, radioactive ice. They understand the whole thing. And at the end of my lecture, they're absolutely speechless.
Again, I'm speaking with Dr. Helen Caldicott, physician, author, and anti-nuclear advocate, founded several organizations, including Physicians for Social Responsibility, and was personally nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize by Nobel laureate Linus Pauling. She is organizing a major international symposium in New York on the second anniversary of Fukushima next week with leading researchers and experts, and her event, Fukushima 2 years later, a global symposium to address mounting medical and ecological consequences, will take place March the 11th and 12th at the New York Academy of Medicine. It's a project of the Helen Caldicott Foundation, and the symposium is co-sponsored by Physicians for Social Responsibility. So is there a part, is there a way that the seminar that you're organizing, the symposium that you're organizing next week in New York, can sort of be directed against the new choice of
No, it's not a political symposium. We've just got some of the world's leading scientists, Ian, speaking there, and some of them said, I'm not going to a conference that's clearly anti-nuclear. I just want to present my data. And that's my role and goal, is to educate the media, who are singularly uneducated about radiation biology and the like, to teach them that it takes 5 to 70 years to get cancer after you've eaten radioactive food, for instance, and the like. And so these scientists, who are just extraordinary people, are going to present their papers and their scientific data. I've got quite a lot of media coming, and we're going to do an editorial briefing for the New York Times and the like, some of the scientists, to teach them. And that's why I set the conference up, because I was so frustrated as a physician that the media said, well, no one's died yet. Well, we don't expect people to fall over dead after a nuclear accident. It takes many years to get their cancers and their diabetes and their cataracts and their premature aging in children and the like and the like. I want to teach the media. But people are welcome to go, $60 only for 2 days of extraordinary lectures and a boxed lunch on both days. It will be live streamed, and if you go to the website HelenCaldicottFoundation.org, there's a place where you can click and it will be live streamed for 2 days.
But the very cause of the problems that you're addressing in the medical context come from the fact that these light boiling water reactors melted down because of a tsunami. And the point, I think, is inescapable that we have similar boiling water reactors
here
in the United States.
Yes. Yes.
And we just mentioned how just south of us here in San Onofre, through a self-inflicted wound, the plant has had to close down. And it has some of the same backup problems in terms of it turns out that what we learned from Fukushima was that the real issues are the backup generators that are supposed to keep the water circulating.
And human fallibility. But, you know, those San Onofre reactors are built very, very near a major earthquake fault.
Right on the ocean, too.
That's so. Right. They should be closed down immediately. Immediately. And, you know, there are 50 million people living within, I think, 50 miles of those reactors, all of whom are, you know, if there was a meltdown, God help them. They can't evacuate. You can't evacuate after a reactor meltdown because the roads will all be clogged and jammed. You'll be irradiated and then you'll be waiting to get your cancers. Terrible. Terrible. And
But that's the point, isn't it? That after we go through these periodic wake-up calls, like Chernobyl, like Three Mile Island, and nothing was more graphic and compelling than what happened in Fukushima, and that was only 2 years ago. We're coming up on the second anniversary. And again, it seems to be impossible to separate the reality of these ticking time bombs out there, 23 of them, and what you're doing. I mean, I understand that you're trying to get the medical information out, but, you know, one would hope that people can connect the dots here.
Well, as I say, well, I mean, I always quote Jefferson, Ian, an informed democracy will behave in a responsible fashion. Indeed, in the 80s, we doctors and others informed the democracy about the medical dangers of nuclear war. When I came here in 78, most Americans said to me, well, it's better to be dead than red. And I said, what? Yeah, we don't want to be communists. I mean, it was extraordinary. A mass psychosis, if you will. So we started describing the medical effects of a bomb dropping on Boston. You know, 5 miles, incineration and vaporization of people. You know, third degree burns out to 20 miles, winds of 500 miles an hour. The whole catastrophe, and that every town and city with a population of 50,000 or more is targeted with at least one hydrogen bomb. And that still pertains to this day. Nothing's changed. We could have a nuclear war tonight by a hacker hacking into the early warning system or a Pentagon computer failing, you name it. But we educated people. And therefore, it's possible, and within 5 years, I have to say, 80% of people were opposed to nuclear weapons and nuclear war, and that helped bring about the end of the Cold War. So I know it can be done, the democracy, the people, Mr. and Mrs. Brown, you know, sitting at home watching Fox, they need to be educated about this. And once they've got it, the politicians then have to respond to their electorate. If the electorate is uneducated and remains so, then the politicians are free to do their will with the corporations. So the media is determining the fate of the earth. The media is determining the fate of the earth.
Well, as a member of the anti-media or the alternative media, I have to thank you for joining us here today, Dr. Helen Caldicott.
That's my pleasure, Ian Masters.
And again, I've been speaking with Dr. Helen Caldicott, who's a physician, author, and anti-nuclear advocate, who's founded several organizations, including Physicians for Social Responsibility, dedicated to opposing the use of nuclear power, depleted uranium munitions, nuclear weapons proliferation, and war. She was personally nominated for a Nobel Peace Prize by Nobel laureate Linus Pauling. And additionally, the Smithsonian Institute has named Dr. Caldicott as one of the most influential women of the 20th century. She's organized a major international symposium in New York on the second anniversary of Fukushima next week with leading researchers and experts. Her event, Fukushima 2 years Later, a Global Symposium to Address Mounting Medical and Ecological Consequences, will take place March the 11th and 12th at the New York Academy of Medicine. It's a project of the Helen Caldicott Foundation, and the symposium is co-sponsored by Physicians for Social Responsibility. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll get an update on the disputed elections in Kenya.
But the atoms here, in spite of hysteria, it flourishes in Utah as well as Siberia. And whether you're a black, white, red, or brown, the question is this when you boil it down. To be or not to be, that's the question. The answer to it all ain't military datum, like who gets there firstest with the mostest atoms. No, the people of the world must decide their fate. They gotta get together or disintegrate. A whole less truth to be self-evident that all men may be cremated equal.